It is Wednesday, December 30th, 2020. We're almost done this terrible year, and this is Josh Nason's Punch Out. Hi, everyone. I am Josh Nason, contributing editor for WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Hope everyone had a great Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. Hopefully you celebrated it safely and that everyone's good and healthy and all that good stuff as we approach the end of this terrible year and we jump into hopefully a much better 2021. The show was originally going to go up on Sunday. It didn't feel right given the passing, sudden passing, sad passing of Brody Lee, a.k.a. John Huber, former Luke Harper in WWE. Really sad. I really can't add much more to it than, you know, what is already out there. Just terrible. Obviously, anytime someone leaves behind two young kids and so young, and it just seemed, the phrase that kind of came to mind or the word is just unfair. You know, this guy had finally got a shot in AEW, was doing some things, and, you know, I think everyone was kind of wondering if he just basically disappeared over the last couple of months or kind of wondering. I didn't know if maybe there was a, you know, family situation at home and, you know, not involving his health, obviously, but something going on, maybe some of the kids or something. And then, you know, obviously we heard this news on Saturday and it was terrible, just unfair, unfair because the family aspect unfair because he finally got this shot. And then, you know, this happens and just, you know, it's awful, absolutely awful. I can't add anything more to it. However, I mean, I think the one positive is you see this incredible outpouring on social media with just everyone from every company around that interactions with him. So many positive things to say. And, you know, it's always tough because you wish that you get to tell some of these people these things when they're alive. And, you know, I guess for his family's sake, they get to at least hear a lot of the positive things that, you know, people said about his family. Obviously, they wish it was under much different circumstances, but it is what it is. And obviously, you know, our thoughts go out to them and their family. And, you know, we'll have the holiday edition or the tribute edition, rather, of Dynamite coming up tonight. Obviously, WWE didn't seem to do a whole lot on Monday, which is a little bit disappointing, but, you know, don't really want to legislate that. But let's get into this week's show. We'll change gears a bit. Continue our look back at the year that was in mixed martial arts in 2020, Paul Fontaine and I. We go the third quarter of the year. So this was August, September, October. No, I always mess this up. July, August, September. There we go. Every year I mess it up. It's a holiday tradition. This was a three-month period that, you know, the UFC had essentially established themselves in this new world. They had found their locations. They had found their kind of their hubs to work out of with both Fight Island and also the Apex as well. So in a lot of ways, this was a very business as usual quarter for the UFC and a lot of fights being made for the months ahead and some interesting stuff. We got to talk about Conor. That comes up, especially in September. But again, this is you'll hear me talk about this. You know, we looked at this this stretch. It was kind of like, you know, this seems to be the transitional quarter. Every single year, it feels like these 3 months are kind of the transition into always a big final 3 months a year. But as we get through it, you're like, oh yeah, this happened and this happened and this happened and this happened. So it was a interesting 3 months as always. And of course, next week at some point, Paul and I will wrap up the year and then we'll obviously look ahead to 2021. So without further ado, let's get to it. Josh Nason, Paul Fontaine. Quarter three of the year 2020 in the world of mixed martial arts. Enjoy. Well, a special afternoon recording edition of the Josh Nason's Punch Out podcast here again with the one and only Paul Fontaine, WrestlingObserver.com, and also Fight Game Media as well. We're continuing our four-part series looking at the year that was in 2020 in the world of mixed martial arts. We hit July, August, and September. And looking through this list, Paul, before we go through this, there were some eventful fights, which was nice. We kind of got back to some normalcy when it came to results and regular shows, more than regular shows, as it would turn out. But also was, I think, very similar like every year. Like the third quarter always seems to be a table setter for what's going to be a nice big push at the end.
Yeah, I mean, as I'm reviewing it, there's a lot less COVID-related news than I thought there'd be. So I think, you know, like you said, it was more like a normal year. And honestly, like in July, August, September was probably out of, you know, after the initial panic and then this resurgence that we've had in the last couple of months, this was probably when, you know, things were at their best in terms of, you know, overall infections and, you know, and everything that we've been going through. So it's really kind of hyped up, you know, I guess around Thanksgiving, it got really bad. So yeah, this is going to be probably our most normal, just talking about fights and news and stuff.
And speaking of normals, we kick off July. We have a top fighter who was saying wasn't going to come back, complaining about pay and, you know, you think basically promoting their self-worth, which is great. And more fighters need to do that's great. And that'd be Jorge Masvidal. All of a sudden getting pulled into a last minute fight with, on what turned out to be the biggest UFC pay-per-view of the year. So we'll get here. So Gilbert Burns originally supposed to fight Kamaru Usman for the welterweight title at UFC 251 in Abu Dhabi, the kickoff to Fight Island, or this really kind of the centerpiece of Fight Island. Out of that title fighting against Usman, I was like, okay, who could possibly fight on very short notice? And all of a sudden, lo and behold, Jorge Masvidal gets the call if he can pass all the tests. And with this came a new deal for him. Funny how that works, right? So and there was this big question every day, like he has to get to Vegas first, pass a test there. Then they fly to Abu Dhabi, has to pass another test there. That was like here to here to here. So already we had this trepidation about where this very interesting fight that we were really kind of looking forward to. I think obviously more of a box office draw for Masvidal than it would have been Gilbert Burns. So we get there, the fight happens, and Kamaru Usman dominated Jorge Masvidal over five rounds, retaining his middleweight champion or welterweight championship rather. Again, dominant performance. And, you know, not the sexiest performance, but it was, you know, it was, I think, what a lot of people expected if Masvidal couldn't get off early. And, yeah, that's kind of how that went. And the co-main event, Alex Volkanovski retaining his featherweight championship over Max Holloway in their rematch. Controversial to some, very tight fight again. Some people wanting a third fight. Obviously, that would change down the road. Amanda Ribas submitting Paige VanZant, what would be the Instagram star's final UFC fight. We'll get to her in a little bit. Rose Namajunas, split decision with Jessica Andrade, and also probably one of the more memorable fights of the year in just the fact that it should have been stopped. Peter Yan, this was the, if you guys remember, this is the triple title event that we had talked about in the last show. Peter Yan beating up Jose Aldo to win the vacant bantamweight title. Controversial, and again, just basically had him mounted for the back, just pounding the sides of his head. Aldo was beaten, bloodied. Fight should have been called, and I think later it might have been Jason Herzog that was a referee in the fight, and basically admitted later should have been called probably. All in all, huge pay-per-view numbers for this. This was 1.3 million when it was all said and done, and these are numbers that, again, with ESPN owning all this, don't really get out there that much. They want people to know this is a huge event. So, yeah, it was Jorge Masvidal, confirmed draw. We didn't know it before because I don't think it was Kamaru Usman popping this number. Three fights on the show, a lot of interest, and, yeah, the main event was kind of boring, but overall, I remember this being a very fun night.
Oh, yeah, and this was it was the first event on Fight Island, so I think that probably had a little bit to do with the buy rate, you know, curiosity and people that were on the inside or, you know, even somewhat hardcore fans-ish, you know, were aware that what this was going to be. It was just, you know, the flash forum in Abu Dhabi, but for people that had seen Dana's earlier interviews and had, you know, maybe watched John Oliver and all this stuff, the UFC that we talked about, like maybe they thought they were going to be tuning in and watching fights on the beach, you know? So, you know, and as it turns out, you know, if they bought this show, they got three title fights, just an awesome card. Like you said, you know, there wasn't every fight on the main card was, you know, had a lot of interest, I'll say, like with Paige VanZant, we had the return of Rose Namajunas, and then the three title fights, and long time, you know, Jose Aldo and Max Holloway, possibly the two best featherweights of all time in UFC, you know, both fighting in title fights. And then, you know, the main event with, you know, Jorge Masvidal coming off his BMF title. And 1.3 million pay-per-view buys. And that was, I guess that's probably the domestic number, because the one we talked about a couple shows ago, Conor McGregor just recently released something where which showed UFC internal documents that had that pay-per-view with Cerrone doing like one, they had the exact number, and it was like, you know, over 1.3 million, but that would be total, you know, including international. So this one, if you included international, probably a lot higher than 1.3. So yeah, it was, you know, a hell of a show. In the, you know, even the prelims, you know, you had Mr. Finland on the prelims. You had a couple interesting other fights. Yuri Prochazka, who's possibly, you know, a future champion at light heavyweight, making his UFC debut impressively. It was just a great card overall, top to bottom.
Let's go over the rest of the events of the month, because obviously this, as we talked about, kicked off the Fight Island residency part one. So we had this must have been the event right after this. So UFC and ESPN 13, Calvin Kattar, my guy, Mr. New Hampshire, outlasting Dan Ige in the main event for this, and not much else on the card, to be quite honest. UFC Fight Island, this was the second one following. So Deiveson Figueiredo, early in the month had tested positive for the virus. Excuse me, and timing there, right? And was putting the flyweight title rematch, the vacant flyweight title, the rematch between he and Joe Benavidez, potentially on ice for a little bit. However, he was able to recover, all good, and showed no ill effects from the virus whatsoever, routing Joseph Benavidez to win the flyweight title championship. This was dominant. This was a no doubter. If the first fight was if people weren't convinced then, they were convinced now. And UFC had an absolute killer in their hands. And the new flyweight champion, Deiveson Figueiredo, also on this show, Jack Hermanson submitted Kelvin Gastelum quite quickly. Kelvin Gastelum has kind of been on struggle street here for a little bit and did not look good in this one. And finally, the final Fight Island show that we're going to talk about here, for July, Robert Whittaker returning and looking pretty good in decisioning Darren Till in the main event. Fabricio Werdum welcoming Alexander Gustafsson to the heavyweight division and Gustafsson's return. And Gustafsson probably hoping that he had, you know, stayed retired as Fabricio Werdum submitted him in what would be his final UFC fight. Kazma Chimaev, the hype train continues. His second win in 11 days, picking up a nice win here. There was a trilogy that I don't think any of us really cared about seeing, but we got anyway in Shogun Hua defeating Little Noguera, Little Nog, in their trilogy finale. And then there was a controversy with Francisco Ronaldo yelling, or with Dan Hardy was involved. I'm trying to remember the specifics here. I meant to write this down. But essentially, there was a late stoppage, I believe, and then as the referee was leaving the cage, Dan Hardy, who was doing commentary, decided to stand up and start yelling at the referee, and they kind of just went back and forth a little bit, but it was kind of one of these things where afterward, you know, Dana White wasn't happy and basically said, you know, if anyone does that again, they're going to get fired. So we haven't seen any of those issues again. The empty arena era kind of bring everyone a little bit closer together, but in the, you know, the UFC results, again, other than the Kattar Ige fight and that card, there was interesting results that kind of, you know, again, set the table for the rest of the year.
Yeah, you mentioned that, you know, there wasn't much else. I mean, that main card was just excruciatingly long. All five fights went to decisions, and they're all kind of just boring. Even the main event was fun, and Tim Elliott, almost never has a bad fight, and he was in the co-main. But the prelims on that show were awesome. I mean, they were, you know, almost all finishes, and you had that really impressive debut of Khamzat, where he landed it was a second round finish, but I think he just he just dominated Phillips at middleweight, and then he would, you know, ended up, you talked about 2-11, he goes down, you know. I think even more impressively than the fact that he had two wins in 11 days was he fought at 185 in the first fight and then went down to 170 11 days later and looked even more impressive. And then he went back up, I think he went back up to 185, for the third fight that he would have later in the year. And then upcoming next month, he's going to be fighting back at welterweight again. So, you know, like, this guy's just bouncing around back and forth. He said in his post-fight interview, like in his first fight, that he wants both titles. He's going to fight at 170 and 185, and he wants both titles. And he just, I mean, this guy, you know, you talk about a breakout star. I mean, this was, he couldn't do much more than what he did, going from, you know, being on the prelims to fighting in a UFC main event in less than 6 months. Like, I mean, that was just incredible. And that, yeah, that controversy that you talk about, I think what it was, you know, he was literally screaming at the ref to stop the fight because the Trinaldo's opponent was taking so much damage, Jay Herbert. And finally, the ref stopped it. I probably should have been stopped in the second, and he stopped it 90 seconds into the third. And, you know, and then of course, the ref started screaming back at him. And none of this was on camera, but it was pretty well covered. You know, because there was some press at Fight Island and stuff was getting out and whatnot. So, but I mean, the fact that he was screaming at him, like, that was pretty much like during the fight, and obviously the ref could hear him. So, yeah, it was interesting. And that's the kind of thing that we wouldn't get in regular year. So, you know, just another byproduct of this, empty arena era, if we want to call it that.
Yeah, Khamzat Chimaev, going back to that. So he fought July 16th. He fought on the undercard of Cater versus Ige, submitted John Phillips in the second round. So we just talked about that. That was at middleweight. Then he broke the record for the quickest turnaround between UFC wins in the modern era at 10 days by going to 185 and then, 170, being a Reese McKee first round TKO. And then, obviously, we'll talk about him more in September. He won a performance of the night for that second win as well. So, yeah, that was a quick turnaround, two different weight classes. And, yeah, and Dana White was all about him. It's always fascinating to me how certain guys just – and this is Chimaev's UFC debut that month. Some guys, all of a sudden, they have a stretch like that or something unusual, and all of a sudden it's like – everyone is all about them. Like, all this media was all about him. Dana White's all about him. It's interesting kind of how that happens.
Yeah. And I mean, and it was him, I mean, basically him and Kevin Holland were I think the two guys that, you know, at the beginning of the year, we had no idea who they were. And now they're like people you just can't wait to see fight again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I expect probably we'll see them fight maybe sometime in 2021. Let's go to some of the, fights that were made for the coming months. Pedro Munhoz, first of all, so Pedro Munhoz, this is funny. So he popped for the coronavirus. So he's out of the Frankie Edgar main event for Fight Island. And I can't remember which show that was now. Maybe it was the Cater Ige show, it was a future show rather. Anyway, so he's out of this main event. So the fight was later remade for UFC 252. And Sean O'Malley versus Marlon Vera was also added to that show as well. Then the Munhoz fight was moved with Edgar's move to a August headliner instead. So the fight moved like three times in the span of like a couple weeks. So I thought that was pretty funny. Holly Holm versus Irene Aldana was moved from August 1st to a positive corona test by Aldana, and that making Derek Brunson versus Edmund Shahbazyan the main event for that one. We'll talk about that in a second. UFC 254 gang, the much anticipated title unification bout versus Khabib Nurmagomedov versus Justin Gaethje, the return of Khabib Nurmagomedov. We'll talk more about him in a minute. Thiago Santos versus Glover Teixeira was targeted for the September 12th main event. We'll talk more about that. Fight got bounced around quite a bit. Bellator announced they were going to be aiming for a late July return at Foxwoods in Connecticut in a bubble-type environment. And, of course, they would start doing this with also boxing promotions as well. Michael Chandler versus Benson Henderson 2 was scheduled for Bellator on August 7th. Alistair Overeem versus Augusto Sakai main event was planned for September 5th. UFC 253 got Israel Adesanya versus Paulo Costa for September. And again, a much anticipated main event there. It was announced that Mike Tyson was going to come out of retirement after 15 years to fight Roy Jones Jr. in an exhibition boxing match. I include this simply because it's fascinating and it was popped a huge number. We'll talk more about that on our next show. But yeah, Mike Tyson finally returning to boxing after, you know, Instagram videos leaked and all this stuff of him just looking great and 250-year-olds going at it. Not Impact Wrestling or WWE or TNA, something like that. These guys are going to go at it. We'll talk more about that later on. Then Ryan Bader finally was announced he was going to be defending his Bellator light heavyweight championship against challenger Vadim Nemkov. Thoughts on any of that?
I mean, there's not a lot there. It's mostly table setting, like we talked about. It's funny. I pointed out at the beginning that there wasn't a lot of COVID related news, and it seems like there's a little bit more than what I thought there was. But the Bellator, you know, announcing their comeback was, I think, a little. I feel like they might have waited just a little bit too long, because by the time they did eventually come back, like UFC was, you know, had been doing it for a while and we're running every week and we're kind of on a roll. And I think Bellator just was kind of lost in the shuffle. And, you know, between that and the DAZN deal ending and them moving networks, like, I just feel like they've fallen so far out of relevancy. It's not even funny. Mm. And, I mean, other than that, like, yeah, we got a lot of interesting fights set up for, you know, for the upcoming months that we'll get into soon.
And we'll go to the other news bits of the month. Khabib Nurmagomedov's father dying after corona complications. He had heart issues. It was really a long struggle. What struck me about this was the way the MMA community really, really kind of ran with the story in a lot of ways. And it wasn't like, I know he was his trainer, but he wasn't like it was weird. He was treated almost like this towering figure in the sport. And like Dana White, the UFC never does this. Like, they put out a press release about it. Dana White, some personal comments. It was very interesting just how they really kind of like went out of their way to express their sympathies and all this stuff in a way that they don't do with other fighters. I thought that was interesting for no other reason. Just it stood out to me for that. Mara Moraes popped for coronavirus. The Nevada State Athletic Commission announced they're going to be no longer leading fighter purses. The reason why that's big news, or why there's an interesting story, is because, you know, with so much secrecy in terms of what fighters get paid and for what, you know, that's what managers use to kind of help negotiate contracts. That's what fighters kind of help know what they're worth in a lot of ways. So the Nevada State Athletic Commission saying they're not going to do that obviously puts more power in the promoter's hands, which necessarily isn't good for fighters. Sean Wheelock, so now he has been calling porn for blind people. I'm not making this up one bit. You can look that up. Pat Miletich, former UFC great, returns for a kickboxing match. This was held in Iowa by his old friend and promoter, Monty Cox. A lot of people there, no masks, and he lost to Michael Nunn in that fight. Mike Perry doing Mike Perry things at a restaurant in Texas, I remember, if I remember right. This video was out there, just him just acting basically a complete asshole, just, you know, pushing old people down and all this stuff. And just, you know, Mike Perry, the fighter, can be kind of fun, but Mike Perry outside just had some things to work at the beginning of the year, and we will talk about him more as the days and months go on here. Venom was announced as the new outfitter for the UFC, replacing Reebok, starting in 2021. We've mentioned that before. There were some rumors about that, but that was obviously big news for them. We'll see more about them in the year ahead. And then finally, Gilbert Melendez was suspended for 2 years by violating USADA protocols, except he was released by the UFC before the test actually happened. So this was just a whole mess. Obviously, he doesn't seem to care much about this. I don't know if he's going to fight again, but, you know, some states follow the USADA rule. So if he wanted to go fight somewhere else, you know, there's this whole USADA test that he shouldn't have had to take to begin with. So again, the USADA, depending on what side you are with that, you know, definitely some issues there to be worked out.
Yeah, it's interesting that he was upset about that, and that obviously he's in the testing pool, so he must have attempted to fight again, or been at least thinking about fighting again, is what I mean to say. And I don't think we're ever going to see him fight again, and this probably makes it even less likely that it'll happen. The Sean Wheelock thing, I heard about this as it was going on, and then I kind of forgot about it, and then just, I don't know, maybe a month ago or so, I'm driving and listening to Howard Stern, and he's playing clips of it. And
that's funny.
Yeah, reminded me of it. And I mean, it was it was pretty good. Like, you know, and yeah, you know what? The guy, he had to make money, right? And, you know, and he's, you know, he was kind of unceremoniously let go from Bellator for, you know, I don't know why, because he was really good there. And I know you've had him on your show. Great dude. Right. You've had, it was, I always get the two Sean's mixed up, but yeah, you've had
both. Yeah. Grandy, yeah. And Wheelock. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, good for him. I mean, and, you know, it got him a little bit of publicity and, you know, and you know what, they need their porn too. So, and yeah, that story about the NSAC no longer releasing fighter purses is kind of, I don't know, I guess annoying would be the best thing. And honestly, like, I don't think that's going to help them in that upcoming case that they've got going on, which I assume we're going to talk about on the next show. Mm-hmm. You know, like that sort of stuff is what adds fuel to the fire.
So let's move on to August, an event or a month that was marked by, again, I feel like every August is the same way, but, you know, this was some events and some news and not a lot of, you know, huge groundbreaking things, which I suppose for the sport and given in the pandemic year was a good thing. We started off with UFC 252. Stipe Miocic, the same guy who said he would not fight during the pandemic, went to a decision with Daniel Cormier to retain the heavyweight title to finish off their trilogy. Cormier retiring after the event. No big surprise. Everyone kind of knew that was happening leading into this. Kyle left the door open that, you know, if there was a title fight on the line, he might consider coming back. But it's hard to believe, you know, he's going to drop to 205 at this point or anything like that. But he's essentially retired. Yair Rozenstruik knocking out Junior Dos Santos. And then Marlon Vera, big upset here, defeating Sean O'Malley after Sean O'Malley got hurt. He was down on the ground and there was this, you know, whole, you know, O'Malley afterwards didn't seem to think he had lost. And he's just talking a lot of crap to Vera afterwards and not really giving him much credit for the win. But still, it was a pretty surprising victory. And you know, I think a lot of people, you know, don't really, you know, Vera lost this past weekend to Jose Aldo. But, you know, Vera is a very live underdog in a lot of ways and a really good fighter. And I think was getting a little bit of shade thrown his way for that one. UFC Vegas, we had Derek Brunson. We talked about that main event. Talk about derailing hype trains. Edmund Shahbazyan, who was undefeated at this point and was looking really good and possibly going to take that jump. Derek Brunson said, nope, dominant win, big TKO victory. Then Jennifer Maia, poor Joanne Calderwood. So Jennifer Maia submits Joanna Calderwood on this show. Calderwood was going to get a title shot against Valentina Shevchenko, decided to take this fight against Maia, and then loses. And then Maia ends up getting the title shot instead. So not good timing there by Joanne Calderwood. UFC, and of course, we're back in Vegas at this point, away from Fight Island. Derek Lewis and his main event, defeating Alexei Oleinik by TKO. And then Chris Weidman picking up a decision over Akhmedov and finally picking up a win in his return to middleweight after the ill-advised jump up to light heavyweight. Michael Chandler in his final Bellator fight knocking out Benson Henderson. Good way to go out there. Vadim Nemkov knocking out Ryan Bader to win the Bellator light heavyweight title at Bellator 244. And UFC Vegas, Frankie Edgar, this much-anticipated Pedro Munhoz fight, edging out Pedro Munhoz by decision in Edgar's bantamweight debut. There was some controversy about that. A lot of people think that Munhoz had won that. And then Shannon Dobson pulling off what is the biggest upset win ever in the UFC. And I looked that up and was kind of looking at that. And, yeah, it was actually legit in terms of the betting odds. She was the biggest upset winner ever in the UFC, which is hard to believe. And finally, the UFC Vegas, Alexander Rakic picking up a boring win over Anthony Smith. And then Neil Magny decisioning Robbie Lawler, of all people. So the mighty have fallen. Thoughts on any of those results?
The Shannon Dobson, yeah, that was was the biggest win ever, which... you know, when you think back to, I don't know, things like TJ Dillashaw beating Henan Barao when no one thought he could, and the Holly Holm fight way back when beating Ronda Rousey, like that's that just kind of tells you like how big of an upset that was. The fight, the one you talked about earlier, the UFC Vegas card, like that was the first one where you had Brunson and Shahbazyan in the main event, which, you know, when you hear Edmund Shahbazyan in the main event, it's like, ooh, you know, like that's kind of tells you the kind of the state of things right now. And that we ended up having just an 8-fight card there, which was, I believe, the shortest UFC card that we'd had in several years. But I don't think like it was ever in danger of being canceled. And we'll have a few more cards like that throughout the year. It's like UFC was just desperate, I would say is the best way to put it, to make sure that to get all these cards in. And so you would have events like this where, you know, it wasn't a full card, but it was enough. And I mean, and the fights weren't bad, you know, and at least you usually had like Derek Brunson. I mean, you know, no one can question him as a main eventer. So, but you, when you have him taking out a guy that is potentially a future main eventer, future title contender early in his career, I think that, you know, that kind of derails his career. Yeah, Michael Chandler knocking out Benson Henderson, kind of how the mighty have fallen. I remember when Benson Henderson first signed with Bellator, I put up an article on Observer.com about it. And I know a lot of people were criticizing that move at the time. And I thought it was actually a smart move for UFC to let him go there. And it, you know, he just kind of has floundered there. And then losing to Michael Chandler, like putting him over on his way out of the territory was, you know, kind of, I don't think we'll see Benson Henderson again. But Chandler gets to come into UFC now, having a win over a former light heavyweight champion and, a lot of momentum behind him. And, he's going to be making his debut soon. So, yeah, it was, start of a big month for fights.
Yeah. Henderson has never struck me as a guy that is a fighter as much as a martial artist that happens to fight, if that makes sense. And I think just,
I get what you're meaning.
Like, yeah. Like just somebody, like if you look at his career, especially that run to UFC, you know, so many split decision wins and so many that was just, you kind of just want him just to take it. And granted, he's going up there against tough competition, but you know, there's just such a trend of his decision after decision after decision. So yeah, it was kind of, That's how I always have thought of Benson Henderson. I know he has some finishes, but just always struck me as kind of the martial artist point fighter type versus an actual fighter.
He doesn't have that killer instinct. No, like, he's too nice of a guy.
Yeah, yeah, very true, very true. And also, I like shorter fight cards personally. I wish every card was like eight fights, like
eight fights. Yeah, four hours.
Yeah, just focus on a lesser group, you know, a smaller group of guys who can actually understand the stories a little bit more, a lot easier to follow, a little quicker to make your way through. But yeah, I don't need 13 fight shows. I'm fine with eight and pairing out some of the guys who literally should just not be in the UFC. They're literally there to fill time for content. That's the only reason that they're there. So when some of these, you know, I don't want fights to fall out due to COVID, the good stuff, but yeah, I mean, I'd love to see them get back to shorter ones. They'll never do it at this point, but you know, when I see a 9-fight card or you know, a couple fights fall off due to injury or weight cut miss or something like that, if they're the lesser end of the card, I'm okay with that.
Well, back in the day, like, and this was probably even before I was watching on a regular basis, but I've gone back and watched some of the shows and research for history and stuff. Like the shows were this long, but a lot of the fights you couldn't see. So, you know, you would have a 4 or 5 fight main card, and then you might have 2 fights on Spike as a pre-show, but that was it. Like, so if you were lucky, you got 6 or 7 fights that were televised, and then they started airing them on Facebook, but nobody watched them on Facebook. It wasn't until they brought in UFC Fight Pass that people really started watching the prelims. And then now with the ESPN, like they're just airing everything. So, you know, like ESPN Plus is starting the shows right with the very first prelim and going right through it. And Bellator is still kind of doing things the old way where, you know, like there's really only maybe two fights outside of the main card that you really need to see. But with UFC, if you want to follow the storylines, you pretty much got to watch everything. And if you don't, you're out of the loop. So that's what happens. You talked about it on your show with Casey that you recorded, and I've even brought it up on different shows that I've done where, you know, and we're like pretty hardcore fans and we're not watching everything. If I'm covering a show, obviously I'm watching it all, but on the shows where I don't cover, like sometimes I tune in 4 or 5 fights in it's like 7 hours is too long.
Yeah. Finally, Miocic, we didn't really talk much about Miocic thing. Obviously that was the fight that to, what they were saying, you know, the top UFC heavyweight in history. It was interesting. It wasn't like a barn burner like I think many of us had hoped. There was an eye poke, if I remember right. And this kind of goes, it's like a trend in all these guys, all their fights. But, you know, I found myself, if, you know, if Cormier won, I was pretty confident he was going to retire because I don't think he wanted any part of Francis Ngannou. Not that he's a coward or anything like that. I think at this point it's like, I always think that, you know, the Danny Glover character from Lethal Weapon, I'm getting too old for this shit. you know, that at some point you're kind of like, or, you know, the police captain who is his last day of retirement decides to go out in the field one more time. Like, I think he knew, it's like, look, I've done enough in my career. I don't need to take a shot from this absolute savage in Francis Ngannou, this killer who could just, you know, break a concrete with his hands, how hard he punches. And, you know, the Miocic fight, their first fight aside, I was like, okay, well, what's going to happen kind of with this? And Miocic won. I am excited to see if Ngannou has made any adjustments, you know, when they fight again. I don't know when this fight is actually going to happen, hopefully soon. But yeah, it was kind of just, you know, it was like Miocic won, and, you know, he's just this very quiet heavyweight champion. And I think obviously UFC would love to have someone a little bit more braggadocious, or someone that it kind of moves the needle a little bit more, or someone like Ngannou who just, you could put on ESPN and everyone, the casual sports fan, is like, wow, who is this guy? But, you know, they have who they have, and that's who they have.
Yeah, I didn't talk about this one mainly just because I know when the fight was first announced, I wasn't really interested in it. I had seen the fight already. Miocic had won, and Cormier is not getting any younger. He seemed more interested in commentary. He had always said that he wasn't going to fight again after his 40th birthday, but he took that fight with Miocic, you know, a couple months after his 40th birthday. And then this one was more like they needed a main event. He was going to get a good payday. They did a really good job building it up to where on fight day, I was super excited for the fight. But I wasn't interested at all when it was first announced. And then just for whatever reason, I bought into the hype, greatest heavyweight ever. And then when the fight happened, it was like, oh yeah, this is pretty much what I thought it was going to be. And then when it was over, it was like, well, I got sucked in, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. And you know, like you said, either way, Cormier was going to be done when it was over. So, yeah, it was, you know, it was too bad that he never got that rematch, that third fight with Jones. I don't think we're ever going to see Cormier fight again for his sake. You know, like he had a good run and finished it off with two losses. He went the distance, so I guess you can say that with him. And you know, and he has the claim about, you know, about the eye poke, that, you know, that maybe it would have gone differently if he hadn't been poked in the eye.
Yeah, it's a shame we never saw that Lesnar fight either. I think that would have been a lot of fun. That would have been a lot of fun. Let's talk about some fights that we were going to get, supposedly. UFC 253 and Jan Blachowicz versus Dominic Reyes for the vacant light heavyweight title after John Jones vacated the belt. UFC 254 getting Robert Whittaker versus Jared Cannonier. UFC 255 getting a double flyweight title main event, Deiveson Figueiredo versus Cody Garbrandt, who is going to be making his debut at flyweight. Against, and also Valentina Shevchenko versus Jennifer Maia. I remember that was announced. So I was like, ooh, boy, that's not going to be a good buy rate one bit. We'd learn more about that show in coming months. UFC 256, Amanda Nunes versus Megan Anderson, booked or planned basically for the featherweight title fight happening again at UFC 256. October UFC Fight Night show got Mara Moraes versus Corey Sandhagen as a main event. Anthony Smith versus, all right, we already talked about this, August 29th, though. Anthony Smith versus Alexander Rakic, main event, I already get that. Yair Rodriguez was hurt out of his UFC main event against Sabiq Magomed Sharipov. Tyron Woodley versus Colby Covington, finally, this grudge match we'd waited to see a long time, finally signed for a September main event on ESPN+. Holly Holm versus Irene Aldana was rescheduled for October 3rd. The rivalry finally made in a bathroom due to a slap to a Korean pop star. Finally going to see it spill over. Brian Ortega returning for the first time since December 2019 versus a Korean zombie booked as a main event for October. Carlos Condit, natural born killer, former WEC star, returning to fight in October against Court McGee. Anderson Silva's final fight was set for Halloween against Uriah Hall. We'll talk about him more on our final show. Curtis Blaydes versus Derek Lewis, headliner scheduled for November. The Tyson-Roy Jones Jr. fight was postponed to November. They didn't give a reason why, but I assume just better scheduling. Juan Archuleta versus somebody named Patchy Mix, who I've never seen fight, was scheduled for the vacant Bellator Bantamweight Championship title fight. And then finally, Darren Till versus Jack Hermanson, set for the December main event. Now, several of these fights never did happen because of coronavirus or moved around or so on and so forth. We got a few of them, but they were obviously, you know, kind of setting up the rest of the year like they normally did. And thoughts on any of that?
Like you, I wasn't expecting much of a buy rate from that double main event that they were talking about. But again, I don't, they were, you know, they were just kind of desperate at that point. And then the UFC 256 show, was supposed to have Nunes and Anderson. At one point, I think they had three different title fights on that show, and the one we ended up with was one that hadn't even been planned. So, you know, that was where, again, as we get into the later part of the year, where I think that COVID just started to ravage things. And honestly, why, you know, through all of this, and you talk about all these different fights that were set up, and then they just kept rebooking things on the fly. And I think that the matchmakers at UFC, Sean Shelby, have done a hell of a job this year. And really, like, when you're, you know, people listening to this, you know, you're going to do a vote soon for promoter of the year, promotion of the year, and all that. Like, I really do feel like the job that they did this year, you know, you typically are going to give it to, you know, people that are building up fights that people want to see. And they did that too. You know, there was a couple of really impressive buy rates this year, but just the fact that you were able to book on the fly and just put out these shows every week. And most of them were really good. You know, I struggle to find a bad show. Like, it's very rare that we've been going through these fights and saying, oh yeah, this was just a terrible card. You know, even you had that one where you mentioned, you know, the main event and nothing else, but even that one, it was just the main card that was bad. The prelims were great. So, yeah, they did a really good job through all this. They kept fighters in the news. They kept booking things, giving us fights we wanted to see, getting us excited about things that were coming, and, you know, delivering when they could. And when they couldn't, you know, giving us suitable replacements for the most part. Patchy Mix actually is one of the guys that, you know, that I enjoyed watching on Bellator when I was watching their shows regularly. I think Patchy's obviously his nickname, but he was, he would fight on the prelims, and I would sometimes watch the prelims. But yeah, putting him in a title fight just kind of seemed like it was out of nowhere. And I think that originally when they postponed the Tyson Roy Jones Jr. fight, I think maybe they were hoping that by November they would be able to have fans. And that was part of the reason. You know, it's probably too just them getting ready for it as well. Like, there was a lot of hype around Tyson when he was releasing the training videos, and he looked really good and in shape and everything. But you know, who knows how much editing went into that, and who knows what kind of shape Roy Jones was in. But I know that personally, I was never even considering ordering that, but a lot of people got excited about it. And as we'll talk about, it did pretty amazing pay-per-view numbers. So
pretty crazy stuff. Go the news of the rest of the news notes from August. Corey Anderson, light heavyweight, to ask for his UFC release. Got it. And signed with Bellator. That was kind of just an out of nowhere headline one day. Luke Rockhold announcing he was going to be returning to the UFC after, you know, getting viciously knocked out by Jan Blachowicz, and Dana White suggesting maybe he retire. Luke Rockhold saying he was going to return after all. Another surprising headline, Paige VanZant. Everyone assumed she was going to sign with Bellator where her husband fights. Nope. She's going to go to Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. And people still confused about this. Obviously, a lot of money on the line. We'll see if the money is worth it. She's hopefully, you know, expected to fight at some point in 2021. Anthony Johnson. Again, the pop business didn't seem to work out that well. So he's going to come back to UFC as a light heavyweight. We'll get more of that in a minute. Oscar De La Hoya announced he is going to be returning to fight because 2020 is a dumpster fire of a year. There was a conundrum. I put the Dana White Contender Series conundrum. There was a lot of talk about Dana White signing a lot of these Contender Series fight guys to replace more higher-priced veterans that may not be doing so well in the UFC roster. So that was kind of a story that was floating out there. I don't know if anyone really asked White directly about this. It's very possible that they did. But it was just kind of something that of note. And obviously, as they're going to be cutting 60 fighters around the end of this year, and obviously they've cut a few guys already, as we'll talk about with Yoel Romero, that, you know, the idea of bringing in lower-priced guys and replacing some of the middle-of-the-pack veterans, you know, just kind of something to watch. I'm not saying that there is something to this, but at least kind of wanted to bring it up because this is a big discussion point based on the amount of guys that were signing from this Dana White Contender Series show. Bellator officially done with Paramount and heading to CBS Sports Network. Dana White said that they're building a UFC hotel in Las Vegas right next to the Apex Center so they could be completely self-sufficient. He was warming to the idea of John Jones at heavyweight. Warming. Tony Ferguson versus Dustin Poirier will probably, quote unquote, co-headline the Khabib versus Justin Gaethje card. He did another speech for Trump at the Republican National Convention. And also Brock Lesnar, we just talked about a minute ago, became a free agent as his WWE deal was done. And of course, let the discussions about UFC and fighting begin. Hasn't been too much of those. We'll talk about a little bit in September, but those are the rest of your headlines from August.
Yeah, I think with the Brock thing, people, they've seen this before, and the fact that he isn't in the USADA testing pool is a pretty clear indication that he's not terribly interested in fighting. So I think Dana White has not bitten there. And then also with no fans, it doesn't really make a ton of sense for UFC to pay him the kind of money that he'd be looking for to fight again. So I don't think I'd be surprised if they were even talking. And if they are, you know, it would probably stop as soon as, you know, they would say, no fans, we can only give you this much. And he'd say, okay, well, I'm not interested, and I'll just sit in my farm in Saskatchewan. There's a lot of, like you said, interesting, you know, Corey Anderson, Paige VanZant leaving. And then, you know, you talked about the Dana White Contender Series. Ryan and I on our podcast had a lengthy discussion on one of our first shows about, you know, all these cuts, and he brought up the point, and he'd crunched some numbers and said that they had signed 36 guys off the Contender Series. And if they're all coming in at entry level contracts, if you want to call it that, at 10,000 to show and 10,000 to win, 36 guys at 10 grand, Yoel Romero made 350,000 for his last fight. So you're basically getting 36 guys for the price of one. And if even three or four of those guys turn out to be stars, you're way better off. So it's kind of like UFC's version of Moneyball. You know, and so these older guys that have the high tickets, it's not all about money, but really it's, you got a guy that's pushing 40, that really all he can do is, you know, stop a rising contender. If he's not going to be fighting for a title, all he's doing is basically just putting up roadblocks and killing potential contenders. So you get rid of them, and then that creates room for new main eventers, new stars to form. You know, the guys we talked about, the Khamzat and the Kevin Owens, and, you know, even Jan Blachowicz, like guys like that, you know, weren't even in the mix a year ago, but you released some of these guys and now they're main eventers. So it makes sense. But it's just, you know, it's a bad look, especially during a pandemic, and it's not as bad as WWE, you know, record profits and releasing guys in the middle of a pandemic where they have nowhere else to go. Like pretty much everybody that UFC's gotten rid of has landed on their feet somewhere else. And in most cases, they're better off than they were before. Mm. Obviously there's some exceptions, but, there seems to be a lot of people out there willing to pay them. And I've even heard it said that this is kind of a strategy for them in terms of this ongoing lawsuit that they've got, you know, where they're proving that there is competition out there. So they're not holding down salaries. And, you know, as soon as they let somebody go, they show up somewhere else. So I think it's just the way it is. And people just got to kind of get used to it and just think of it as, you know, your favorite baseball team, you know, getting rid of a high priced veteran and bringing in, you know, five guys on minor league deals and hoping one or two of them pan out.
Interesting stuff to follow in the year ahead. Let's go to September. Let's go to the results first. UFC 253, Israel Adesanya defeating his rival Paulo Costa rather easily via second round TKO to retain the middleweight championship. Get a little bit of stink of the boring Romero fight off. Be sure to mention that afterward. The aforementioned Jan Blachowicz stunning Dominic Reyes with a TKO win to win the vacant light heavyweight title. I say stunning. You know, a lot of people thought that, you know, Reyes was kind of the sexy pick going into this based off the Jones fight, but, you know, Blachowicz is just kind of one of these lunch pail fighters, and he'll when he puts it on you, he puts it on you. Nice run for him and winning the vacant light heavyweight championship. And I mentioned here there's a lot of heat between Israel and Costa leading up to the fight. And then there was a video that got released of there was a nice friendly exchange they had in the hotel like a week before the fight they kind of get out there and a couple of people are like, you know, they're like, womp, womp, you know, like, I guess some of the stuff was just pre-fight machinations after all. But yeah, I put that in there because that was of note. Speaking of rivals, UFC Vegas, their 11th show there, Colby Covington dominating Tyron Woodley. Woodley submitting due to a fifth round injury with a broken, turned out to be a broken rib. This is kind of a ho-hum fight. I was really looking forward to this. I think probably this fight should have happened like 6 months prior to when it actually did. But regardless, Covington dominant throughout. Also on this show, Nico Price and Cowboy Cerrone went to a draw. This is obviously memorable because with the decision is being read, Price was ecstatic at getting a draw because he drew with one of his favorite fighters ever, and Donald Cerrone. That was kind of a funny visual. Mackenzie Dern, Shamaev again picking up a win, and also Johnny Walker picking up a win as well. So those hype trains back on the track or keeping on. Speaking of Colby Covington, Donald Trump did a call to Covington on air after the fight wrapped up and, you know, was congratulating him, obviously a big fan of Donald Trump, and Trump's a big fan of his. Talked about his UFC relationship before. Afterwards, you know, he was Kamaru Usman was doing commentary on the ESPN desk, and, you know, he went after Usman a bit with some questionable comments. Usman, to me, had the perfect reply. He's like, I broke your jaw. And you know, this is the thing, is like when you put up and like Usman did in breaking Covington's jaw in that December 2019 fight, there's not much Covington can say. So he's still trying to get that rematch, but we'll see what happens there. Dana White suggesting that Tyron Woodley and Donald Cerrone probably should be done with their careers. At this point, neither guy's retired, saying he had no issues with any of Colby Covington's comments, which is a little bit surprising. And then Reebok did issue a statement saying they obviously didn't agree with some of Covington's comments, you know, calling out Black Lives Matter and all that as well. So yeah, this is typical Covington stuff. We'll see where he goes with some of his shtick in the year ahead as the presidency, as we assume, changes hands. Who knows about that, right? UFC Vegas, talking about short shows. The show was down to 7 fights due to various positive coronavirus tests. In the main event, Alistair Overeem being Augustus Sakai by fifth round TKO, and then Ovince St. Preux returning to light heavyweight and knocking out rising prospect Alonzo Menafield. Bellator 255, Phil Davis defeating Lyoto Machida in their rematch, kind of a ho-hum fight. Bellator 256 the night after. I love when Bellator does these back-to-back shows for no reason at all. Juan Archuleta defeating Patchy Mix to win the bantamweight title. And then John Fitch retiring after a long career in a loss to Neiman Gracie. And then finally, UCN Vegas 10, Michelle Watterson, karate hottie herself, edging out Angela Hill. Very tight split decision. And Angela Hill becoming the first African-American woman to headline a UFC show. Thoughts on any of that?
Well, the first two items you talked about, it's funny because UFC 253 had 2 title fights. Israel Adesanya, who, you know, most people think of as the next greatest, you know, pound for pound fighter in UFC. He's kind of the modern day Anderson Silva. And really the show the following week, UFC Vegas 11 with Colt Covington and Woodley, felt like a much bigger show. Mm. And it would have been nice if one of those title fights could have been on that show, and then it would have been even bigger. And I honestly think it probably would have done more on pay-per-view, but that was a decision they made. There's one thing I was thinking about as you were going through this, and it's funny that you brought up the very last point of Angela Hill becoming the first African-American woman to headline a UFC show. Obviously the biggest story of 2020, and we've talked about it constantly through these shows, is COVID. But really the second biggest story, you know, for certainly in North America and definitely in the United States of 2020, is Black Lives Matter. And we have not even mentioned that once. And it's because we're covering UFC. And I feel like for UFC, like I don't want to say Black Lives don't matter, but it's certainly not anything Dana White put a priority on. And when they had that Woodley Covington fight, I thought something that I didn't hear anybody even talk about, but it just struck me huge, was they aired that thing with Covington getting the phone call from Trump, and he was all excited and everything like that. But before the fight, they did not air Tyron Woodley's walkout. And I feel like that's because he was making a Black Lives Matter statement in some way. And there's a reason why they didn't show it. They aired like six straight minutes of commercial. And they never, like on these ESPN Plus, they always air the walkouts for the main eventers. And they didn't do it here. They did it for Covington with his Kurt Angle, you suck thing. But they didn't air Tyron Woodley's walkout. And I just feel like, you know, and then Reebok issuing that statement, I think is telling, especially since they're not going to be the outfitters for very much longer. So there was not a lot of publicity around that. And I just feel it's something that nobody really is talking about much. I think there was a little bit of hype around Angela Hill becoming the first African-American woman to headline a show. And she may have even brought up Black Lives Matter in the promos for that. But I just feel like that's something that UFC, like if we were talking about any other sport, we would be talking a lot about Black Lives Matter. And it just wasn't even a thing in UFC as far as I can see.
Yeah, that's a great point. I forgot all about the fact that they didn't air that walkout. And if you remember, they always air the main event walkouts. And if you remember a couple of days prior at the press conference, do you remember? So the press conference was weird because they initially brought out everyone but the main eventers. And and they're kind of like asking Dana White, well, where's Woodley and Covington? It's just like, well, essentially to paraphrase, like, I want to give attention to some of the other fighters on the card. It's like, what? Yeah. What? Since when do you not promote the main event? And I think afterward they did, they had both those guys. I don't know if they were separate sessions or not, but Woodley, when he was asked every question, he would answer Black Lives Matter.
That's the only answer he gave.
Yeah. And it was, they really made it. See, yeah, you're right. They seem to really have made an effort to kind of diminish that, and especially not having his walkout. And we haven't really heard that much from him since, or I don't know if he's actually, in going through all the headlines, I would have found if he had, you know, put him on blast, so to speak, and said, hey, this is complete BS. You didn't air my walkout and clearly all this. There must be a reason he's not saying anything, but obviously he got beat pretty bad. There's just kind of,
I mean, he didn't show up for the fight. I mean, you'll be honest, like he did not seem interested in that fight at all. Nope. Not the same guy that we've seen before. And maybe he's just in his mind resigned himself to the fact that he's going to collect a check for as long as he can. And when he's not subject to them anymore, then he'll go on and do his own thing. Like, that's the only thing I could think of. And there's no point fighting it because all it's going to do is enrage Dana White. And he's just going to go off and so maybe he's just kind of given up.
There's a shoot interview to be done with Tyron Woodley some point down the road, I think is going to be pretty good. I have a Conor McGregor section here, Paul, because I was going through these headlines and Conor seemed to have come out of retirement. Yeah, we got to talk about Conor, the Dave Meltzer Award, right? So he kind of came out of hibernation. I mean, he's always been tweeting and all this stuff, but this was the classic Conor here in September. So Dana White said he was working on some quote unquote fun stuff for McGregor and expect him back in 2021, which we hope is actually going to happen here in just a couple weeks. So Diego Sanchez said he wanted his retirement fight against McGregor, and McGregor was interested in this. Why? Just because. And he revealed this in DMs with Dana White, which Dana White did not like. And I read these DMs today. I don't think I actually even looked at the article, really kind of delved into it, but I did a little bit today. And it was funny. It was basically just a conversation. And Dana was like, seriously, I'm not going to book you against Diego Sanchez. And he was trying to get a date for LA and all this stuff. And you know, Conor's perspective, he was trying to push for a fight and kind of said, we'll do this. And then a rematch. He wanted to have Sanchez in Dublin and then do a rematch with, I believe the rematch he was talking about was Khabib later in the year and all this stuff. And he mentioned Justin Gaethje. And so you can kind of look at those for yourselves. And then, of course, Dana said that broke a man code in revealing those DMs. And McGregor, of course, went on the offensive of saying, stop lying, because Dana White had denied, he denied a few things. But basically that there was any interest in doing Pacquiao, being involved with the Pacquiao fight. And he said, you were, and there was some other stuff, like basically because Dana had said, like, Conor's not that interested in fighting and all this stuff. And McGregor was pissed off by that. He's like, look, I am interested. As crazy, of course, as it was, he wanted to fight Diego Sanchez out of all people. He was in quote unquote serious talks to fight Pacquiao. And then there was this, he wanted this, Conor going into business for himself. He and Dustin Poirier agreed on social media to a charity fight in Dublin. Zero UFC involvement. And of course, this kind of, I did graphics for it and all this stuff. And everyone's kind of like, is it even possible that they do this? And then Dana White a few days later saying that he's offered both those guys a fight against each other. And we'd see that fight signed in the coming months. Conor McGregor then sending messages to the Disney CEO saying he's asked for four fights since February. And then McGregor, of course, was still in the USADA testing pool, even though he had said he retired and then was reportedly detained for yet another sexual assault allegation, which he vociferously denied. Conor was back in force. And again, it kind of just the beginning of the lead into what we hope will be his actual return in January against Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, I think with all this, this is probably where it became clear to most of us that, you know, we will see Conor again. It's just a matter of when. And this was just basically posturing and trying to get the best deal that he could against the right fighter. When we talked last show, I think it was the last show, or it might have even been the one before, where Dana had claimed or that Conor had turned down a fight or something. You know, we were talking about something, and then we bring up this, which obviously is Conor releasing messages that had happened early in the year. I was actually thinking about it at the time and wondering if that's what they were talking about, like whether it was, oh yeah, McGregor offering to fight Diego Sanchez and Dana just basically not taking him seriously, thinking like, why would I ever even consider booking that fight? So in his mind, that's Conor not wanting to fight. Whereas for Conor, like, I can see, you know, if it's just to get a payday, why not fight Diego Sanchez? Like, you know, it's going to do business no matter who he fights. He could fight you or I, and it's going to do like, you know, 500,000 buys. So, you know, fighting Diego Sanchez is a little bit more of a fight, but not much more. The one thing that I don't see in here, but I remember, was one of them, I think it was Dana, claiming that Conor had broken the bro code by releasing the text message.
The man code. Yeah. The bro code. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So I just thought that was funny. And then him coming back with, well, you lied. So that's also breaking the bro code. So it's just a couple kids fighting, kind of reminiscent of his feud with Tito years ago. But I think Dana's a few years older, and I don't think we're going to see him trying to book a fight against Conor at any point. Although I think that would probably do pretty well on pay-per-view.
Speaking of Tito, I happened to, a couple of months ago, watched the beginning of the bad blood between Dana White and Tito Ortiz that was going to be hyping up that boxing match they were going to have. It's so funny to watch, like all these years later. Dana White looks, I want to say completely different, but physically looks completely different. Like he looks like a pro wrestler now, and back then he looked like a mild mannered fight executive. But it was that's funny to go out your way and see. It's on YouTube. But yeah, Dana White to Ortiz, bad blood. That whole thing. That's a story.
He still had a little bit of hair too, eh?
He did a little bit. Yeah, it was pretty funny stuff. Anyway, let's go to some fights that were made and then not made. This is a little bit of a saga. UFC 254 losing Dustin Poirier versus Tony Ferguson because of failed contract negotiations with Poirier, who wanted more money. Ferguson said that he agreed with Poirier and the UFC should pay him. Dana White, of course, saying that Dustin Poirier simply didn't want to fight. And then Dustin, I think of the most ridiculous thing you could say about Dustin Poirier is he doesn't want to fight. Like, this guy is a fight of the night machine, and it's just a weird flex. Anyway, Dustin Poirier reportedly turned down a fight against Michael Chandler in loyalty to Ferguson for having his back. And obviously Poirier would get a pretty big payday down the road, a new contract. But again, we kind of go back to, it's this cycle. A guy has some issues, and then Dana White, you know, kind of poo-poos it. And then all of a sudden when they need him, you know, they get the new contract and everything's good again. So just kind of, big wheel keeps on turning. Glover Teixeira versus Thiago Santos was postponed due to a positive Teixeira coronavirus test. And obviously that was what happened to make the Michelle Waterson, Angela Hill, that main event. Cody Garbrandt popped for coronavirus, and his flyweight title fight against Deiveson Figueiredo would be off. UFC announced they're going to go back to Fight Island for 5 October shows. UFC 255 got Mike Perry versus Robbie Lawler announced for it. Thiago Alves and Julian Lane bare knuckle fight was set because Phil Baroni pulled out, and then Alves and Hector Lombard won their bare knuckle boxing debuts. Bellator announced they're going to resume the featherweight tourney that kicked off at the beginning of the year with Pitbull Frye versus Pedro Carvalho in a title fight that would also be a quarterfinal. Paul Daly was stretchered out of Bellator 247 due to a bad weight cut, and the main event was canceled. That is so Bellator. Bellator announced they're going to be hosting the first quote-unquote major MMA show in France. I say major because that card was basura. And then Glover Teixeira versus Thiago Santos postponed again due to the coronavirus and rescheduled to November 7th. Thoughts on that?
Well, the Bellator, I mean, that was actually, you know, pretty big news to have a show in France. And it's one of the few Bellator shows that I actually watched this year just because I was interested in seeing, because I think they even had fans there.
They did.
And you had Chuck Congo in the main event, which is horrible, but at least, you know, it was him fighting in his home country, which, you know, and it was what you would expect. It was just an awful fight. You know, went 15 minutes, which made it even worse. But, it was, you know, in the Bellator losing their main event, which, it's the second time in less than a year where they had a main event canceled, more or less like almost during a show. Like if you remember last year, I was actually just doing some research and remembering the fight where Josh Barnett was pulled the day of the show.
Yeah.
And they never announced it at all during, as you're watching the show, like, you know, you had no idea that the main event wasn't happening. And then the actual main event was, I don't even remember, Eric Perez against somebody. And then the Josh Barnett fight just didn't happen. So, it was nice to hear that they were going to be going back to Fight Island and kind of confirmed what people have been talking about, that at least until they can go back to quote unquote normal, that, you know, the new normal is going to be, you know, going back and forth between the Apex and Fight Island, which is, you know, it's the best option they can do. And it's really, at this point, the only way they can get a lot of these international fighters on the cards, because if you're not already in the States, it's pretty difficult to get here or there, I guess would be a better way to put it, since I'm in Canada, to get a working visa. And that's why a lot of these fights have been planned and then fallen out, because the guys and the girls can't get into the country. So when they go to Abu Dhabi, that isn't as much of an option. They can get there. So, you know, I think that's what we'll see in this upcoming run in Fight Island, is we'll see a lot of the international fighters that weren't able to get to the States.
And finally, wrap up with some news. Former Bellator lightweight champion Michael Chandler officially signed with the UFC. And he was announced as a backup for Justin Gaethje versus Khabib Nurmagomedov at Fight Island. So that was pretty interesting. Nick Diaz's manager said he was coming back in 2021. I won't hold my breath for that. Paige Van Zandt and her husband both got the coronavirus. Khabib Nurmagomedov and Jorge Masvidal were noted as quote-unquote premium opponents for Canelo Alvarez as they were fighting through this DAZN deal that Alvarez eventually was able to get out of. It was this whole rigmarole. You guys can kind of look that up if that's of interest. But essentially that DAZN was trying to find interesting opponents as part of this contract, and that two UFC guys were noted as potential premium opponents, even though, you know, neither guy. Well, actually, Masvidal had shown interest in boxing before, but Khabib really hadn't shown that much interest. So it's kind of interesting there. I mentioned, again, some of these shows that were shortened due to coronavirus. Dana Weiss was defending UFC keeping on, keeping on, by saying that, you know, Major League Baseball and the NBA both allowed positive players to play. Again, just kind of lashing out instead of just accepting it and moving on. Dana White filed a motion to dismiss this very strange sex tape extortion case. Bellator officially made the announcement they were moving to CBS Sports Network. Coker also admitted that he had reached out to Brock Lesnar, potentially for him to come in and fight. And Dana White saying that he didn't see Lesnar coming back in any form or fashion. George St. Pierre announced he was going to be returning to the Batroc role for Disney Plus's Falcon and the Winter Soldier. That'll be coming out in March, I believe. Daniel Cormier said he was in early talks with the WWE about a commentary gig. This seems to be one of the stories that just kind of goes on and on and on and never really ends up anywhere. Anthony Johnson submitted to his first USADA drug test, again, anticipating that he was going to be returning to the UFC. That would not be the case. And finally, big surprise, Dana does not like Israel Adesanya's quote-unquote flashy entrances and wants walkouts as minimal as possible. Thoughts on any of the rest of the news from September?
Daniel Cormier thing, I think that if they were still on Fox, that we probably would have seen that already. So that could be part of the issue in terms of him getting on with, you know, rival network. It would have to be obviously UFC signing off on it as well as ESPN, and he's got a pretty good deal with ESPN right now as a commentator. So I'm sure that as soon as that can happen, it will, because I know both sides really want to work together. The Dana White, again, another one we'll talk about next show, defending the UFC outbreaks with that bizarre video that just came out, that was like a Trump campaign video. Nick Diaz, you mentioned, I actually do think he will come back in 21. From what I understand, he is in the drug pool. So that's usually a pretty, pretty good sign that they are serious about coming back. And there's a lot of interesting potential opponents for him at either 185 or 170. That, you know, the obvious names that you'd think of, you know, Jorge Masvidal, even Conor McGregor, you know, it's whoever, like anybody would want to fight Nick Diaz because it's going to do business. And, you know, he'll do his one fight, take five more years off and, you know, and smoke some weed, you know, which is what he likes to do. Michael Chandler, signing, I think it's funny because I kind of thought that when they brought him in, like what they would do is they'd give him a showcase fight against, you know, a lower level guy and just let him build himself up to fans that may not be familiar with him because he's been in Bellator for so long. But they seem to be going the opposite direction and saying this is a big star and he's going to be in the main event right off the bat and he's going to sink or swim. So more like what they did with Ben Askren, as opposed to some of the other guys that they brought in, like even Justin Gaethje, you know, was not necessarily. Marlon Moraes is another one that, you know, they kind of worked their way up just a little bit. Whereas Chandler is just going right into the deep end. Like he's going to be, you know, he was a backup here. He potentially could have had his first fight being for the title, but he's going to be in a showcase match on the undercard of the Conor McGregor Dustin Poirier fight. And, you know, probably even a backup in that fight. Although I don't expect those guys never pull out of fights. Like if they can walk, they'll be fighting. So, you know, Conor McGregor, Dustin Poirier, I think we're less than a month away. I'm pretty sure that fight's going to happen unless, you know, one of them comes out with Corona or something. Mm. It was just, you know, a lot of interesting stuff here. And we talk about table setting and whatnot, but this is really like stuff that's happening. So, really got a set for the last part of the year, which, you know, is pretty successful year for UFC, all things considered.
Mm. We'll talk more about that. The aforementioned Dana White video, free agency moves, retirement moves, big fights being made, big results and all that stuff. We'll talk about that as we wrap up the year here in a couple of weeks. Paul, thanks so much. This is obviously a fun 3-month stretch we went through, and yeah, looking forward to wrapping the series up here rather soon.
Yeah, and good luck to you in the finals of the the fantasy football.
Yeah.
I just heard your message that you sent to Alvarez and Vinny V, putting them on blast and the challenge to Semper Vivi. So I don't know who I'm pulling for. I don't know if I want to listen to you for a week on Wrestling
as Water. How dare you? How dare you, Paul? Wow, what a swerve. The last few minutes of this podcast. Unbelievable.
No, it was interesting. But it got me thinking, like, is this a work? And then it's like, no, it can't be a work because, like, I'm thinking, well, maybe Sam's taking a week off and you're just doing this as a work. But no, you don't know what's going to happen. So this could be a shoot.
It is. And, it is. I sent that clip in on my own. I think that I said that maybe we'll have a little bit of fun with this. I want to call out Brian, his mystery manager, who I guess is Craig, from what it was said on the show. And Craig's a good manager. That's a good team. Good team. I wanted to have some fun with it. Again, call out Vinny because he didn't, you know, Mr. Football expert himself. I wanted to give a shot at him and all that stuff. So yeah, I wanted to have some fun with that. And yeah, so
had a good schedule.
You keep saying the schedule thing, Paul. I still won those games.
We'll see next year.
Also, before we let you go, I see if for some reason somebody this is the only show they've listened to, which I can't imagine that's the case. Tell them where to catch up to you and where to listen to you and all that good stuff.
WrestlingObserver.com, obviously. So we've got a few weeks off between UFC shows, so I'll just be doing the wrestling ratings articles probably for the next little while. But on Fight Game Media, You can find some of my writings as well there. And we're going to be doing our year-end awards coming up soon. So we'll have for MMA, show of the year, fighter of the year, breakout star of the year. Who's next is one of the categories. So we all predict who we think is going to break out in 2021. And then, and then of course, Ryan Frederick and I have the In the Clinch MMA podcast on the Fight Game Media Network. So you can Google that and check it out on the Patreon group.
Good stuff. All right, Paul, thanks so much. And then, we'll talk to you and we'll wrap up this year here in a couple of weeks.
Sounds good.
All right. Big thanks to Paul Fontaine for dropping by. And obviously, we'll check in with him one more time next week as we wrap up the year that was 2020. And then obviously, we'll look ahead to 2021 and hopefully brighter times and better days for everyone. And speaking of better days and bright times, your thoughts and prayers were heard, my friends, because I don't know if you heard, I defeated the evil king himself, Brian Alvarez, over a 2-week stretch to move on to the finals of our fantasy football league against one and only Mike Sempervivi. And I was, I sent out a challenge to Mike Sempervivi. He hasn't fully answered yet. He said we can figure out something. I sent in a clip to the Brian Vinny show, essentially, chiding Brian and Vinny for their efforts this year and kind of just poo-pooing my team over the past couple weeks. And Brian couldn't even remember his team name, which was, of course, funny. I believe Craig Proper has been revealed quietly revealed as the invisible hand that was running Alvarez's team this entire year. But I digress, because I beat him and then was on to Mike Sempervivi. In week one of our 2-week playoffs, they use the standard ESPN playoff scoring or format in this league, which is a little bit unusual for those who have played fantasy football before. But this is my first time doing it. And so anyway, so week one, I was a little bit worried. Christmas Day, Alvin Kamara scored, 6 touchdowns, I believe, for Mike Sempervivi. He had 54 points out of one guy going into our matchup after Christmas. And I had Dalvin Cook and Kirk Cousins on that day, and they, between them and then Tampa Bay the next day, Tampa Bay defense, I had 3 guys that essentially had matched Mike Sempervivi's one guy. However, the fantasy gods smiled upon me, had big days from everyone else, and I carry a 50-point lead going into this weekend's matchup, and I simply have to outscore him. Basically, I have a 50-point buffer, and I just have to beat him again and hope that I don't have a shit week, and then I win the Wrestling Observer Fantasy Football Championship. And yeah, anything can happen, but it'd be a great honor, and I'm going to take this thing home. I'm going to do it for all of you, and then we'll see what Sempervivi gives up. My offer to him, my bet before this thing started, was 1 week guest hosting Wrestling Observer Live with Brian Alvarez, because I know that would bother Brian. And give Mike a week off and have him be silenced for a week. So we'll see what happens with everything, but I need to actually win first. So hopefully some good things happen for me coming up this weekend. So we'll call it good from here. Again, you have a lot of choice in your podcast day, especially in holiday weeks where you may be home and not a lot of chances to listen to podcasts. Hopefully this is kind of some evergreen content, as the kids say. Listen to it whenever you want. But this is a lot of fun for me and a lot of fun for Paul, I know. And I hope you guys enjoy this. And again, I appreciate the time you spend with me. Have a great New Year's Eve. Have a great, safe New Year's Eve. And we'll talk to you on the other side in 2021. Much better times ahead, I swear. Until next time, insert catchphrase here.